Hey everybody, welcome to Best Show Best. This is the best of the best show, the new version of the best show. And for people who don't know, the best show takes place each and every Tuesday night from 9 p.m. till midnight over at thebestshow.net. And if you are new to the program, these are little bite-sized greatest hits samples of what we do every week. So check this out. And if you want more, you can listen to the full 3-hour extravaganza and check it out. And if you want to support the best show, the way to do that is to download the episodes and to give us reviews on iTunes and to tell people that the show is back and that you like it. So please check out this new episode of Best Show Best. Now I'm going to go to the phones. I'm being told that on the hotline right now, we have a famous guest is on the hotline. Not the usual riffraff that calls this show. Actual, honest to goodness, guest. We have, is this Molly Shannon?
Yes, is this Tom?
It is. How are you?
I'm good. Can you hear me all right?
I can.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
Oh. Well, thank you for calling. I appreciate it so much.
It's my pleasure.
I'm an enormous fan of yours.
Oh, thank you.
You're the greatest. That just goes with that. I'm just gonna put that out in the front of this thing. You can just know
thank
that.
Wow! Thank you so much. That's so nice.
That's in the bank. You can take that. So, you, Molly Shannon, have done so many things, and I guess I want to tell everybody that you have the movie coming out in, it's going to be at the Montclair Film Festival on May 9th, it will be at the Montclair Film, yeah. May 8th, May 8th, Friday, May 8th.
This Saturday.
Yes, well, it's this Friday.
Yeah.
No, I got it wrong, Friday? You're right, no, oh no, see, I'm getting it all wrong. It is the 9th. May 9th, yeah. Saturday, May 9th, your movie, Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, appears at the Montclair Film Festival, and people in New Jersey can find out about that by going to montclairfilmfest.org.
Yep.
So this
I was going to try to come in for it, but my daughter has a piano recital in Los Angeles, so I unfortunately cannot make it, but I was going to try to fly in for it.
Well, I guess that, I don't know, maybe people, you can send a cardboard cutout, like a standee, like a theater, like a lobby thing that you see. Like,
yeah, maybe I should do that. But I think that the director is going to be there, and I think that Thomas Mann is going to be there, and I believe Jesse, I shouldn't say, but there's going to be quite a few people that will be at the screening.
Okay, so it's worth going if you're in the area. You should see the movie. And the movie had a great response at Sundance.
It did. Right? Yes. It won the grand jury prize.
Were you there for that?
I was. It was so exciting because we really did not know that was going to happen. And it just played so beautifully. People really responded to it. And so we were all so excited.
That's awesome. And you see everybody, because it's like you do things in a vacuum so much of the time. And then to actually get the response right in front of you, that's crazy.
It was crazy. It really was amazing. And it played in this giant theater in Sundance. It was packed, and it was just, I think it was so exciting. And the director, Alfonso, had asked me if I wanted to see the movie beforehand in a small screening room in L.A., and I was so happy that I had told him that I wanted to wait and just see it for the first time at Sundance in front of the big audience. So it was so exciting. It was just so thrilling.
Oh, that's awesome. So you experienced it as the audience experienced it.
I did, yes.
That's fantastic.
And I sat next to Olivia, who plays Rachel. She's one of the leads of the movie with Thomas Mann and RJ. And it was so great sitting next to her because I play her mother in the movie. And it was just like a really special experience. I love the movie. I think it came out great.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, congratulations on all of it. And if you're not able to see the screening at the Montclair Film Festival, it opens in June, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes. That is correct. I think it opens first in L.A. and New York, mm-hmm. and then it rolls out into all the other cities. So it opens in, in June, on I think June 12th in L.A. and New York, and then it'll roll out to all the other cities after that.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you do a movie that, and this is a drama, I did not get a chance to see it yet. I'm sorry, but
oh, that's okay.
Well, it's not okay, but we'll accept it. But
yeah,
it's when you're doing something that has the like super sad things in it. What is it like to stay in that headspace where you know you're going to work and it's like, well, I'm going to be doing sad stuff all day.
Well, there was a scene where, sometimes it's not all day, but it is kind of hard. As a matter of fact, Jesse Andrews, the writer of the novel and the writer of the movie, his mother, she's not an actress. She just wanted to be in one of the scenes. And she said, oh, my gosh, I have so much respect for actors. She goes, I can't believe how many times you have to do these kind of emotional takes over and over and over and over again and stay in kind of a sad place for, you know, many hours. So she really had no idea. So, yeah, it is kind of hard, but I just try to think about the character and not think about myself too much and just try to really just be in the moment of the character that I'm playing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you can kind of, yeah. do you have to, like, dole your emotions out a little? Because you have to do a scene, you're doing a thing 15 times to get all the coverage on it. So
exactly. It's a good question. Because, like, for example, I just worked with this director who we had a really big emotional scene, and I said, you know, I can't break down sobbing. I can't do that too many times in a row. So let me know, you know, when you're doing, like, the master, if you don't really need that much crying, versus when you're really coming in for the close-up and when you need it, so that I can kind of know, okay, I'm not going to be able to do it. I can do it maybe twice or,
yeah,
you know, but I can't do it five times in a row. There's no way. So I think it's great when you can kind of teach the directors, if it's their first or second movie, just to kind of, not Alfonso, but some other people, you know, to kind of teach them, if they've never done it before, of how to work with actors and how to get the most out of the actors if it's an emotional scene.
Yeah, that you just can't keep. You're not a, this is not like a tic-tac-toe chicken or something like that where you keep putting the pellets in and it just dances all day.
Exactly. I'm not an emotional machine, my God. But I'll try to give it to you if you let me know when you're on my close-up. I'll get ready and know, okay, I've got to give it at this moment, which is technical and it's hard because you have to pull yourself into this sad state. And, you know, it's like I use all the stuff that I learned at NYU Drama School to mm-hmm. do that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Will Chamberlain used to have a thing when he would say to the coach, because the coach, he was, like, famous for not being a great practice player. Like, And the coach would be like, why don't you try and practice? Like, he would show up, like, eating a sandwich to practice. And then he said, yeah, he would say to the coach, look, you get it from me one time. Do you want it in practice or do you want it in the game? You tell me which one time you want it. I will give it to you either this afternoon.
That's so good.
Or when everybody is in the arena. Your choice.
That is hysterical. He had very good, basketball boundaries.
Yes. Well, it's also, I would say now that would be hard to picture a guy saying that now. I think that was like those old sports days where dudes looked like they looked like mechanics half the time. Like they were like not in particularly good shape, but they were athletes.
Oh, that's funny.
So you, talking about you doing things over and over, it's funny because you also you did the opposite of it on SNL, where it's like you have one shot at a thing. So it's the exact opposite skill set.
Exactly. Yeah, that is different because you're doing live comedy and you just have that one chance to do it, like 5, 4, 3, 2, boom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a very different type of performing. It's like it's exhilarating. It makes your heart pound, and I would get nervous every single time, but it's also like the most thrilling. Mm-hmm. I would say it's like the equivalent of like doing like a physical risk, like climbing a mountain, or it's that type of adrenaline rush.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it couldn't be more different than doing movies, but they're both, yeah, but I love the live performance too. I really miss doing a variety show. It's really, there's nothing like it.
Yeah. How do you get that energy? Like, because I would be like clawing my eyes out with having to swallow that much energy, and then you have to like, how do you get yourself to that state where you can just be and pace yourself? Is that just practice gets you there? Because it's
no, not really. I mean, because I don't even think practice, you know, does anything. It never makes that kind of that fear go away. I mean, personally, I don't think, like, even if I do talk shows or whatever, I always get, like, my heart starts pounding, and I always feel kind of nervous, but I think it's just because I'm, you know, passionate about my work, and I want to, you know, make people happy or entertain people or please people, so I never really get rid of that feeling. No matter how much you practice, I still feel that nervousness for live performance, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I mean, do you feel that way doing your show? Like, do you get nervous? Is it different doing a podcast versus live performing? Do you feel that way?
Well,
before you start a show?
That's what I like about this show is this is, like, we don't pre-record this. This is happening now. This is a live show, and we have live phones and everything coming in. We built a radio studio here so that the show it's like the live thing, and it's not pre-recorded. So, yeah, we're in the moment now.
That's amazing. Now I'm getting really nervous.
Oh, stop. You are not getting nervous. It's me, and it's this guy, Mike, who screens calls for me, who you got to see this guy. You know what? I don't even want to tell you about this guy. He's out there. He makes me bring him Coors Light to do the show.
I love it.
And I hear
the crack
of the can. Terrible. Yeah. So isn't it funny about SNL, Molly Shannon, that it's like there's this strange nostalgia that goes on with it where everybody's always like they always say, oh, I wish the show, remember how great it was 5 years ago when these people were on it? And then it like happens every time. Then 5 years later, they're nostalgic for the people who happened 5 years. You know what I mean? Like it always.
Exactly.
Everybody's got this thing where they're just like, oh man, what happened to the good old days when Will Forte was on the show and all these people? Like, no, but you guys were complaining about that when he was on. You were saying, what happened to the good old days when Molly Shannon was on the show? And it's, but it's like, it is the culture of SNL, I think, is something that is eternally fascinating because you have to go do this thing. Like, it's not a concept when you're working there. You actually have to make the show. But for people at home, it's this larger thing that embodies just, you know, decades of memories and work and all their favorite things. All in one thing, but you actually have to build another brick on that every week.
Yeah, but it is so interesting what you're saying, because people do always say that. They're like, oh, I liked it better then. And so I really can't imagine what Lorne Michaels must think, because he's been around for almost the whole time. I mean, he did have a little period where he wasn't there, but I think he just knows how it goes through cycles and it has its ups and down periods, because he's seen it the whole time. So.
Yeah.
And lived it and seen all these different casts and lived through it. So I would be curious what his theory is about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people just like to laugh and they want to feel good. And so they really care about comedy. And it's just like a sweet feeling if they do get mad or don't like it or miss old performers. It's like they feel like a sense of ownership, I think.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Ultimately, it's worked its way into people's lives to such a deep level that there's some proprietary quality to it where they're like, this is my Saturday Night Live, or those guys that was my cast. And then, but they always modify it. Everybody ends up loving all the casts, and then but then they feel like, when I watch it, what happened to the good old days? It's like, oh, people gotta click it down a couple notches, I guess. Ultimately.
That is so funny. And meanwhile, when we first started, like, I remember Will Ferrell and me and Sherry O'Terry, I remember the critics were so hard on this. They were really hard, and we did not get good reviews. And I remember thinking, huh. I remember Will Ferrell in Entertainment Weekly was voted least favorite newcomer, worst newcomer, and he hung the review up on his door. So people were really very hard on us, and I thought, and that, I remember thinking, oh, God, I don't agree with this at all. I think these people are so good and funny. And I felt like the press hadn't kind of caught up to our group, because I felt like we were going to really do a great job, you know?
Yeah, but it's a matter of waiting for people to catch up sometimes to what you're doing, and then they need to understand it. And like comic personas are hard to instantly relate to, especially really kind of strong ones. It's hard. It's because once you're on their side, you're all the way in with them. But I feel like it's kind of, maybe it's a testament to what it takes to break through to get all the way into somebody's heart. That they don't, you know, if you're wishy-washy, people can understand that within the first couple seconds. But it's hard to want to, like, I remember because you came in during a transitional stretch. Like, you came in halfway through a season, right?
I did. I came in, I started with the old group. Like, I started with Adam Sandler and Chris Farley and Tim Meadows, Chris Elliott. Mark McKinney, it was like a completely different group. Mm-hmm. And then that group, many of them left, except for like me, Norm MacDonald, David Spade, Tim Meadows. There was like a handful of us that left, but Farley, Sandler, they all left. So, and Mike Myers. So I really saw the two different groups. Oh, I'm so sorry. Let me just turn that off. So basically, yes, it was really interesting to kind of have that experience of the two different casts.
Mm-hmm. Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here to let you know about our latest episode of Office Hours Live.
Office Hours is great fun.
With the great John Early and Theda Hamill.
Very handsome.
Thank you. They're here to talk about their new movie, Stress Positions. And we just had a wonderful time. There was a lot of laughter and joy. Don't believe me? Well, listen for yourself on the podcast app of your choice. You're not going to want to miss a second. That's at Office Hours Live. At the podcast app of your choice.
Bum, 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 bum.
I love Vic and Doug, and I love drinking my wine.
Because you're watching that kind of rebuilding go on a little bit, like that.
Exactly, I really was. Yeah, because at the time that I came on, there was this big article that had come out. It was on the cover of New York Magazine. This reporter had done a story on the show, and I think, I'm not sure, but I think Lauren thought he was like a friend of the show's, and then he did this scathing, you know, article on Saturday Night Live, and they set Chris Farley up, and they did a photo shoot with him, and they used like a photo of Chris Farley with a TV on his head, it was the cover of the magazine, and it said Saturday Night Dead,
mm-hmm.
and it was just terrible, and Lauren was really, you know, obviously upset, and so that's when I started. It was like the old regime with the new regime.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when you did, you had so many awesome characters, obviously. No, we don't even need to say that. But one thing I've always wanted to ask you, you know, the Joyologist character, right? Is there an Anne Margaret component to that voice?
That's so funny. No, I never really, I do love Anne Margaret, but there really wasn't. It's basically like a female version of my father. My father was, he would get really excited and happy about things, kind of a little manic-y, like, oh, Molly. So it's, and then he could also get very down and depressed. He would kind of have the two moods. So it's a little bit of me imitating my dad in a slightly manic state. But I did the character, but I did it as a woman.
Okay.
Yeah. And then it's also like based on, women, I'm trying to think what else. Yeah, kind of my dad. Yeah, my dad in a very, like, feeling, like, overjoyed about life.
Uh-huh. Dad on the upswing. Yeah.
Yeah, dad on the upswing, yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have Molly Shannon for a couple more minutes, and we'll let you get back to your busy night.
And... Oh, please, I'm having fun.
Oh, okay. Now... You said you went to NYU drama school?
I did, yes. Uh-huh. And I lived in New York City, and my sister, as a matter of fact, used to live in Summit, so I know Summit, New Jersey really well. I was always visiting. It's so pretty there. I love it.
Oh, I worked in Summit for so much of my life. I worked in Summit.
Did you work at a music store?
Yeah, I did, actually. Like, who
did somebody
tell?
Did they sell instruments or just sheet music?
Oh, they sold sheet music and instruments. Why? Who told you this?
That's so cool.
Did somebody tell you that?
I don't know. I did my research.
Oh no, that's horrifying. I feel like the spotlight has shifted over to me now. You're oh no. Yes, I did.
I
sell.
I passed there across in Summit, New Jersey, because I was there a lot. So I'm like, trying to think if I ever came into your store. So wait, when did you work there? During what years?
I worked there for a long time, and then there was a point where I said, I'm never going back to Summit, New Jersey ever again. I was there for all of the 90s probably. And then I was like, as a kid working there and into my 20s, and then I'm like, I'm never going back. I'm done with Summit. And then I started writing on a TV show, the show Monk, and then that was...
Yeah, it's a great show.
Well, thank you. I was there for the... I wrote on it for the run, and then it was like, well, the offices are going to be in Summit, New Jersey, is where, because the guy who created the show, Andy Breckman, lived in the area and wanted to do it there. So I was back in Summit for another, for 8 years I was back again. So.
Oh my God, and Andy is a Saturday Night Live writer.
Yes, Andy was on SNL in the 80s, so he was there for a lot of the, he saw a lot of transition also, so yeah. I worked with Andy for years.
That is so good. So it's so interesting. Yeah. Well, that is so cool. People love that show. Did you have fun writing on Monk?
Yeah, I did. I learned a million things working on it. And when you work on something for a long time, you get to, it's interesting to see the shape of something year after year and what it takes to keep a thing going and trying to keep injecting energy and things into it. And, I mean, how many years were you on SNL total?
I did it for six seasons. And, okay. Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, I really had fun. But by the time I left, I was really ready to just pass the baton to other comedians. And I feel like, yeah, you get – I wanted to leave on a good note when I was still really enjoying it and feeling like I was coming up with stuff. I didn't want to overstay my welcome. Mm-hmm. So six seasons seemed pretty good.
Yeah, six is – that's because you make your mark and then you say goodbye. And I remember you did Schools Out on your final episode, right?
Oh, yeah. You remember that?
Yes, I remember that.
That's so sweet. Yeah, my friend Scott Wainio wrote that. And it was just so fun to do that. God, that's so sweet. Nobody has ever brought that up.
Well...
So thank you, Tom.
Of course.
I'm so impressed that you remembered that.
I pay attention to these. I wasn't kidding when I said I'm a fan.
Oh, my God. And wait, I wanted to say one thing. You know, our producer, Nora Skinner, is from Montclair, New Jersey. So she'll be at the big screening on Saturday, too, and she's the best.
Okay. So if you are in New Jersey, you really should go on Saturday the 9th to see the screening of Me and Earl and the Dying Girl at the Montclair Film Festival.
I would definitely go, Tom, if I were in town.
If it wasn't for this piano recital.
Exactly. If it wasn't for that, I would be there.
You're just going to be staring at that piano saying, if only it wasn't for that, I'd be in Montclair right now. Well,
it's true.
Well, Molly Shannon, I'm going to ask you a few rapid fire questions and then I will let you get on with your night.
Okay.
Let's see here. What is the dumbest purchase you've ever made?
The dumbest purchase. Ooh, this is fun. Okay, I have to think really fast. Rapid fire. Dumbest purchase I've ever made. Shoot. Hold on. Can we go back to that one? I didn't think of something off the top of my
head. All right.
Okay.
Let's see. Blah, 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 blah. Who doesn't get their just desserts?
Who doesn't get their just desserts? What does that mean? What do you mean?
Who doesn't get the acclaim they deserve?
Oh, I thought you said who doesn't get just dessert.
Oh.
Like, what is that? Who doesn't get the acclaim they deserve? Let me think here. You know what? I really love the kid in Whiplash. I felt like he should have been nominated for an Oscar, too, so that kind of bothered me. Miles Teller, I was like, I mean, of course I love the guy who won, but I was like, Miles Teller was just as good, and I felt like he should have been nominated too. So I didn't like that. I felt when I saw the movie, I was like, yeah.
All right, Miles Teller. Now another question. Yeah. Let's see here. What's the most embarrassing thing you've said to a celebrity?
I saw Kathy Bates at a Starbucks, and I thought, I was like, oh, I recognize her, not realizing it was Kathy Bates, and I thought she was my friend. And I was like, hey, and I went up and gave her a hug, and then I realized, oh, my God, this is Kathy Bates, and I think I know her. And, you know, you would think, because I'm an actress, that I would know that, because that happens to me with strangers, where people think they've gone to school with me, or they think they're friends with me, and then they're like, oh, that's right, it's Molly Shannon. So that was very embarrassing.
Yeah, you just couldn't help yourself. And that does not give anyone permission. That is a lesson to everybody. Don't just, you can't just hug people just because you've seen them on your television.
But people do that. For some reason, there's a thing where because they see you in their living room, they want to give you a hug. It's more intimate than the movies if you're on TV. Mm-hmm. People really feel like they know you, I think, if you're in their living room.
Sure, because you've invited them into your house.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, another question. Enough with this nerd stuff, right?
No, I like all these questions.
Oh, no, enough with nerd stuff in general. Like, you know, every movie's like a nerd movie now. You know what I mean? Like, enough with...
Like the animation. Enough with it. Yeah, with it.
Exactly. Thank you. Yes.
Enough with the nerd stuff. Come on, Tom.
Come on. I'm not the one green-lighting these things. Don't yell at me.
Thank God.
What's the longest you've ever gone without sleeping?
Not long. Just one night, I would say.
Okay. And
I panicked sometimes when I have to wake up early for a movie. So I was doing The Music Man with Matthew Broderick, and I had a 5 a.m. pickup. This driver was going to pick me up to go work for the day, and I kept looking at my clock, and it was like 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m., and I never fell asleep. And then 5 a.m., the phone rang, and I was like, oh, I saw the sun coming up. But I got over my fear of not sleeping at all, because I realized, oh, you could go perform and work for the whole day, and it doesn't matter if you haven't slept. I felt completely fine. So now I don't worry if I don't get any sleep. And if I only get an hour, I don't worry. I never take sleeping pills. I just go to work on no sleep, and I'm totally fine.
Yeah, good. That's the healthy way to do it.
Yeah, it got me over my fear. You can still function on no sleep, as long as it's not a couple days in a row. But one day, no problem.
Okay. Now let's go back to that final question. What was the one that you didn't know the answer to?
The worst purchase.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, I'm going to say... let me think here. The worst purchase. I'm going to say... God, that is so hard. I don't buy that much stuff. You know what? I just in general, I buy clothes a lot online, and it never works. They it's never the same. So just in general, I stopped doing that. So most of the clothing that I bought online, I always have to mail back. So I wasted a lot of money doing that.
Okay. That's a sensible answer. It's not like you bought a statue of yourself or anything.
Nothing like that.
Yeah, nothing troubling. That would be the most troubling purchase. Well, one final question is, what is the most popular movie that you've never seen?
I've never seen Apocalypse Now.
Okay, that's a big one.
Yeah. I know. I would like to see it, and I'd like to see the making of it,
The Hearts of Darkness.
I would love to see that too. So that's a big popular one I've never seen.
All right. That's a great answer. Molly Shannon, thank you so much. I'm such a big fan of yours, and I appreciate you taking the time to call in and talk about all these things. And congratulations on all the success of the movie. And people can see Me and Earl and the Dying Girl in June when it starts rolling out in theaters. But if you're in New Jersey, go to the Montclair Film Festival this Saturday, May 9th, and there'll be all sorts of people from the movie on hand. And you can find out about that over at montclairfilmfest.org. Thank you so much, Molly. I appreciate
it. Tom, thank you so much. You're so generous, and you're a gentleman, and you're awfully funny and sweet. And I want to say, Mike, enjoy your beer, and it was a pleasure to your show.
That's going to make him – I'm going to – he's going to – that he'll be rubbing that in my face for a year now that you told him to enjoy his beer. All right. Thank you so much, Molly.
Okay, good.
You take care.
Okay, bye, Tom.
Okay. Right. Bye. How do you like that, Mike? That was awesome. How nice is... What's that? Yeah, you got a soundbite. I'm deleting it, though, unfortunately. Not saving that. Someone, Dudio, delete that. Pull that out. That'll be our Nixon tapes. Where'd the 15 seconds go? Of Mike getting complimented by Molly Shannon. That's great. She seems like the nicest person ever. Mike's now saying how he saw her in a Tower Records. Okay. Tower. Mike let her shop. I let her shop. Thanks again, everybody, for listening to Best Show Best, and I want to thank Martin DeGrell for supervising the episodes. I want to thank Jason Gore, Pat Byrne, Martine Sellis, Brendan McDonald, AP Mike, John Worster, of course, and you. And once again, listen to The Best Show live each and every Tuesday night on your computer at thebestshow.net. Thanks so much.